This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. My name, as always, is Alex Perney, and today we are very pleased to welcome on Sammy Chalfu with Great American Bullion. We're going to be discussing precious metal investing. It's something that I'm sure everyone kind of understands maybe the intrinsic value of things like gold, platinum, silver, palladium, and understands that they, you know, certainly do have some value. But when it comes to investing in these types of products, a lot of people don't necessarily know kind of where to start, Certainly understood that these things have value, but where do they kind of fit into a portfolio? Why might some people want to invest in them? What kind of options are out there for people to invest in this stuff? You know, it's not just saying, hey, I'm going to buy a big golden nugget. You know, what is out there? Why would you want to choose one product over another? And what are some of the advantages of doing so? And today we are very pleased to welcome on Sammy Chalfu. So Sammy, give us a little bit of background about yourself and your role with Great American Bullion, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Alex. So I've been in the precious metals industry since 2008. 2011, I started trading gold bars and coins. And 2017, I co-founded a company that does the same. And in 2021, we launched Seagold Technologies, LLC, and we just rolled out greatamericanbullion.com to provide precious metals for both IRAs and for direct delivery, and the process is straightforward. Our pricing is live. So 16 years of experience in the industry, and in those 16 years, what we do see are three main questions: is how, why, and what. So usually when a client will come to us, they will usually ask us, or they will come with excuse me, with a thought process. You know, I am concerned about the market. I'm concerned about the dollar. Certainly, we're not financial advisors. We don't provide financial advice or tax advice or investment advice. But we are a retailer and we provide physical metals. With that, most of our clients that come to us, they usually ask us. They tell us that they are concerned about the devaluation of the dollar, the money printing, the current geopolitical conditions. And they want to diversify. Many of the clients will say, we want to protect our portfolio. We want to use it as a hedge, similar to what happened in 2007 and 8. Those that had gold didn't suffer as much that those didn't. Back then, 2006, gold was roughly about $600. And by 2011, it was $1,900 because of the market crash of 2007. A lot of people lost about 60% or so of their retirement accounts, as you may have noted. So that's kind of the why that most of our clients present to us when they're addressing this. It's important to us to know why. Most people are not buying gold to make a profit immediately. They're buying gold, again, to preserve what they worked hard for over their lifespan, their lifetime. And to pass on something to their kids, their family, save for the daughter's wedding and save for the tuition, and so they put some gold aside. That's the main question about the why.
Great. So to get a little bit in depth about that, it's easy enough for people to understand saying, okay, well, this particular asset, didn't devalue, such as the S&P 500 or, some other type of asset that might have been devalued, and just to pick on the last financial crisis, notwithstanding what happened during COVID, because I think some of the data on that's a little bit aberrant, one, because we never really seen something like that before. So it's kind of hard to draw any lasting comparisons to what goes on in the market, when you don't have a global pandemic, considering the last big one was what, 1911. So, when looking at, more routine, and I, saying routine for an economic collapse is never great, but, routine ebbs and flows of the market when it comes to the context of things like recessions. When looking back at that, what are some of the factors that play into gold, precious metals inherently having some type of buffer against whether it be inflation, broader market concerns such as, why is gold doing better or not dropping as much as something like the S&P 500? What are some of the market factors that kind of affect and bring value to these particular assets?
The key factor, in my humble opinion, is if you have 100 coins in your hands or 100 bars, no matter what happens, you have 100 coins and 100 bars in the market, unless somebody stole them from you, right? But if you have your money with a major financial institutions, that will never go away, like Lehman Brothers. Well, guess what? They did go away, right? So the third-party risk, the counterparty risk, the non-tangible fact of the paper market. Now, again, I'm not a financial advisor, but we in the precious metals industry, and most people in it will agree that we believe in diversification. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. My wife, for example, manages our stock portfolio, and she was concerned a lot when the market went down. She was happy. She is happy when the market is doing good. And guess what? That's when people buy physical metals, or at least should consider buying physical metals. You don't want to buy it when the crash happens, because basically you already lost X amount. I mean, it's not a bad idea to buy and try to save some, right? But it's usually ideal to acquire precious metals and add it to your portfolio when you're at the high end of the cycle. And going back to the routine, it's a cyclical environment. So if we look at 2007, market crashed, the Dow Jones went down all the way down, I think 6,700, and then gold prices gradually went up all the way to $1,924 by September 2011. Then the market started to stabilize, And the Dow Jones starts to go up, and then gold prices went down. By 2015, we have gold at $1,053, and the Dow Jones, was 24,000 at the time. Don't quote me on that. I don't have the data in front of me. But what we're seeing today is what we're seeing in 2006. In 2006, we're seeing the Dow Jones at the all-time high, I think 13,000 to 14,000 points at the time. And gold was at $600. That was also all-time high. So when both of them are at all-time high, there's huge concerns. People are starting to buy gold because they're concerned about the market. The market continues to do good. But what if the market crashes? Similar to what happened in 2006. Now, you potentially are looking at gold going higher. That's what most analysts are saying. Obviously, not past performance and not an indicator of future performance. But that's the key to this. Diversification is the key to the cycle. So you have, God forbid, your stock portfolio goes down, you have gold going up, it will balance. Whether it's the stock, the currency, and all that. Today, we're having one of the largest bond bubbles in the market. Today, we're having unfortunate wars around the world. Currency wars with other superpowers out there that are either dumping the dollar or creating bilateral trade, but within their own currencies. So we want to make sure that, are we positioned? God forbid. I don't think that the dollar is going to go away. It's still one of the most, if not the most important reserve currencies in the world. But we certainly are seeing that, I don't know how much you're paying for groceries, but I'm seeing that my $100 doesn't get me as much groceries as it used to 2 years ago during COVID. You saw the difference.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's some important kind of things that you brought up in there. I think some of them were well-rounded, but some things I'd like to kind of elaborate a little bit more on are, one, the tradability of this asset. Just like you said with currencies, currency is only as good as the other end of the transaction. My $100 bill that I have in my hand, great, I can, hand it to someone, but unless they also apply value to it, it really means nothing. We got taken off the gold standard back in the 70s that we removed from the gold standard. So, there really is nothing but good faith in that type of currency. Now, when he talks about, especially with trade and economic factors, you have something that has intrinsic value no matter where you go with it. I put a gold coin in my pocket and I go to Istanbul, or I travel to, Sri Lanka or I go to Sydney, Australia, as long as someone understands what gold is, there's going to be some type of mechanism of trade or at least some value exchange that can happen. Granted, no one's going to go and start, paying for things with gold coins when you go and travel. It's, kind of not the point of what I'm saying, but it's the applied or accepted value of this type of asset and the portability and tangibility of it that's very important. Something I kind of like to bring up as well. But something I'd like to kind of get your thoughts on are, besides just the fact that we inherently apply value to this, which is, why we have currencies, whether it's the the euro, the pound sterling, the ruble, the US dollar, we apply value to it, but why do we necessarily apply value to this stuff? Besides it being shiny, why does this stuff inherently still hold its value? I think that's something that is important to explain to people besides just the economic factor of, large, political ideologies and being able to cross trade. What are some of the other things that inherently provide value and continue to keep this as a, mechanism of investment?
That's a very, very good and deep question because it takes us back to the source of money. What money? Where did money come from, right? Literally, the paper money came from, I'm going to fast track thousands of years, right? That the gold's been around for over 5,000 years. Well, people started to barter with stuff, dates and wheat and all that, and perishable perhaps. Gold became, when it was discovered, became a light asset of high value that people can trade with. And back in the Roman Empire, that where paper notes were created, why were they created? Which is what is money today. Were created and they were backed by gold, right? Rather than you moving your gold from Alex to Sammy. Give Sammy this paper and that paper is backed by gold, right? And what led to the collapse of the Roman Empire is that the overprinting of the IOUs and not enough. And that's what we're seeing when fast forward thousands of years to Nixon, 1970, took us off the gold standard. Gold was $35 an ounce and you can buy a Cadillac for $5,000. Right now, an average Cadillac would be probably $65,000 or so, right? Move back to before the Weimar Republic or during that time, 1920s, gold was $20 an ounce until Roosevelt put us on the gold standard and readjusted the price to $35 an ounce and stayed that. So if you think about the value, answering your question about why does it preserve value, it's what you also said. It's an agreed upon value. And that's how much you're willing to pay for the loaf of bread, right? So if you go to today, an ounce of gold is about, what, $2,030-some today, right? The spot price, not the coin, which is the market indicator. If you divide that by 400, I'll do it quickly, the $5, right? $5. Mm-hmm. That probably is the loaf of bread right now, right? Some of them are cheaper. Some of them are more expensive, depending on where you shop. Back in the 20s, $20, you divide that by 400, you're going to get 5 cents. That was a loaf of bread. So the relationship between commodities is almost constant. When people say, I cannot afford it because the price went up. The reality is the price, the value didn't go up. The value, the price didn't go up. The value of it went up compared to the dollar because the dollar lost value. The dollar lost value. The loaf of bread is the same cost. So now, because of we printing too much money and the international community dumping the dollar, we're seeing devaluation of the dollar. That's why. While we see the Dow Jones on, 34 to 38,000 right now, economically, we're doing great in the stock market. But guess what? Anybody that's listening here is shopping every day at Kroger, Ralph's, or whatever they shop, right? So if you are, you know that you're paying more. I remember paying for a cup of water $1.99 in 2021. Right now, I pay $3.19. That's over 50% increase in the price. People's income did not increase by 50%. Now, if income is following the inflation, then there's no inflation. This is just, you know, take from here and put here. But the income is not. That's why the purchasing power is diminishing. I hope that answers your question.
No, yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I kind of like to bring up on this is, you know, besides the you know, more deeper economic portions that you very well alluded to, there's also utilization of this as an asset in industrial applications. You know, a lot of people, you know, may not realize or have a, you know, kind of, you know, maybe a passing knowledge of it, but these things have, you know, really no passing alternative when it comes to what some of these things can do. You know, to pick on silver, it's the best conductor of electricity that we have in readily available to us, meaning that, you know, if we want to make electronics or something, we need to utilize things like silver and gold for some of these industrial applications. I think it would be, you know, well enough to say that I don't think anyone thinks that their cell phone's going away or the computer they're using is going to be replaced by, you know, something more analog ever. And until we find some other way of doing it for the foreseeable future, you know, this is, you know, kind of the methods of industrialization that are still going to be used. And, you know, what is the basic law of economics? Supply and demand. If you have relatively low supply of something, and precious metals are in relatively low supply compared to, you know, copper or steel or aluminum, you know, you're going to see the prices of these things continue to climb. And, you know, with gold and all sorts of other things, it's the industrial application part of it's something I find very interesting. Is there any kind of things that you'd like to add to that that maybe I missed? I know platinum and palladium are maybe kind of the, you know, more distant cousins to people's thoughts on investing, but all four of these have incredibly robust markets for stuff besides just jewelry or being shiny.
No, absolutely. And that's a really, really good point. We don't touch upon that much in the industry, but it is a very important component, especially with electronic manufacturing, medical devices, precision devices, all these in EV vehicles now, more cell phones are hitting the market than ever. And so there's more demand into precious metals for the various reasons, whether it's the high conductivity of silver or the non-corrosion factor of platinum and gold. And that's why they use them mostly in palladium in medical devices and other industrial factors. Certainly the industrial demand is not going down. In multi-industries, we're electronic, small precision, defense manufacturing, space manufacturing, aerospace, everything is relying on one, two, or more of those precious metals, if not more. You're talking about, for example, with, you know, I'm not plugging NVIDIA as a stock, but they shot up to $800. Why? Because now they are expanding their processing system on computers, and those systems are using precious metals to for high efficiency, right? So absolutely, you know, what gold, silver, platinum, palladium, but specifically gold and silver provide is not only a perceived value, it's a practical value, is a consumable value, and also is a tradable value. There's nowhere around the world, and that's like when I'm selling gold, when somebody calls me, hey, I want to buy gold, what should I buy? Buy this coin or that, which we're going to go to the what in a bit, right? I told him it doesn't really matter, you know. Gold is gold, so buy something, at least buy something that is relevant to your portfolio, diversified, right? But yes, absolutely, the multi-dimensional application of precious metals is massive.
Yeah, and that's, you know, again, something I don't think people really have much of an appreciation for, and just how interesting these things are, again, from a trade value, a value proposition just inherent in the, you know, what we've covered, but also just the industrial applications. I maybe nerd out more on the industrial side of things than most, but, you know, people don't realize if you were to take all, you know, if you take all of your old electronics, take the batteries out, put them in a blender, pour some nitric acid in there, you can pull all the gold out of it. You know, it's not even inherently that complex of a process when people recycle this stuff. And people also don't realize that when people go, you know, these large e-recycling facilities are in the big business of selling metals. Just kind of the other industries you don't realize, you know, electronics recyclers, they're not repurposing your, you know, gateway PC from 1996. They're putting it in a blender, pulling out the silver.
Scrap metals, that's their business. Scrap precious metals, that's what they do.
And people just don't realize how much is out there. If you want to see some interesting videos on YouTube, search electronic scrap recycling, and you'll see kind of what I'm talking about. It's fascinating to see just how much of this stuff is in our everyday lives. Even if you don't think you own gold, you would be blown away by what things you own or have precious metals. Your car, besides the electronics, the catalyst for EPA regulations are full of things like platinum. Palladium and platinum. That's why they get stolen so many times. You know, depending on where you live, that's why people are out there with hacksaws cutting these things out of cars. It's for precious metals. They're valuable. It's not just an expensive car part. It's, you know, it's got a bunch of precious metals in it. So again, I could go on for a long time about that stuff. It's something I find interesting. And I always like to kind of touch on it whenever I talk to anyone about precious metals or someone on the podcast as well. So I think it's kind of a good point to transition a little bit to kind of look at the how and the what. I think the how is kind of the good one to bookend, and the what I think really, really serves well to kind of talk about right now. There's a lot of different types of precious metals out, or I would say, let's call it units, just as a broad term. You know, people think of precious metals, you think of Fort Knox with all these gold bars stacked up. People think about gold coins and all sorts of different things. But there's a lot of different stuff out there, and people need to kind of understand, you know, what's the, you know, why would someone go for one thing versus another? What kind of products are even out there to begin with? Is it all just silver bars? Is it all just gold coins? What's out there? So let's, in kind of your own words, let's dive into the what.
Thank you. My main disclosure as a gold dealer is, you know, you want to buy gold to diversify, but what should you buy? I tell clients, many others perhaps out there, they will try to make one coin shine more. Oh, buy this, it's going to appreciate more. That's just not nonsense, because gold is gold, in my opinion, and silver is silver. Unless you're buying a collectible coin, you're a collector, you know what you want, you'll ask for it. But for the purpose of whether you buy within your Advanta IRA or with Great American Bullion or whatever, what you want to do is you want to understand the difference. Like you said, there are a few differences. There's what type of metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. You choose the metal based on what you want. Then there's the size of the metal. There's kilo bars all the way to 1 gram assets, kilo bars and coins. There's only coins and bars, right? So now people that are looking to diversify mostly with their directly for direct delivery or within their retirement account, they want to know the difference. Now, for us, it doesn't make a difference. Gold is gold, silver is silver. What you want to do is buy something that makes sense for you. And what that is, if you just want to park money, buy large assets. If you want to have the ability to liquidate a little bit at a time, distribute amongst family, perhaps, you want to have the ability to, you know, whenever the, you know, use as you go, right? Liquidity is important. That's why many across the industry and across companies, most clients buy what is called fractional items. And fractional items provide the liquidity, the smaller liquidity. You know, some people buy the gram, some people buy the tenth of an ounce, some people buy the quarter of an ounce. So rarely they buy the half ounce or the 1 ounce or the larger assets. Why? Because, say, right now gold is at 2,000, right? Say back in towards $600, you bought 1 ounce, and now it's 2,000, but you only need to liquidate $500. Then you'll have to liquidate a full ounce to do that. And in a hyperinflationary environment, potentially, people, you know, and we've seen this, I'm not talking on Weimar Republic when the mark hit the trillion mark to liquidate. I'm talking even recently in Greece or in Lebanon or other countries where by the time you order your food, the price has gone up, right? And those times, people hold on as much to the gold and liquidate a little bit at a time, and that's where liquidity is that. Not only that, but also there's the distribution and estate planning. Some people like, okay, I have X amount of kids, and I want to give this much to this kid, this much to this kid, or I want to donate this much, whatever it is, or family members. That divisibility provides liquidity to the buyer. So number one, we talked about the type of the metal: gold, silver, platinum, palladium. Number two, we talked about the liquidity. Number three is the purity. Now, I have no preference. I always preface this, is that gold is gold, right? But if I take a tenth of an ounce American Eagle, I take a tenth of an ounce Royal Canadian Mint, for example, or Perth Mint, a tenth of an ounce Royal Canadian Mint has the same amount of gold as a tenth of an ounce Eagle. However, the Eagle tends to be a little more expensive than the Royal Canadian Mint, and the Eagle is 91.67% pure versus the Royal Canadian Mint. I'm using Royal Canadian Mint as an example because there's the Britannia, the Perth, a bunch of other coins, right? So if I come to you, hey, Alex, I got this coin and this coin. This is more expensive than this one. This is higher purity than this one. Which one would you take?
If they both have the same resale value, I'd take whichever one's cheaper on the rip.
There you have it. So at the end of the day, that's what I tell the client. You choose what you want. Some people tell me, you know what? I love the American Eagle because of either design or, we're in the United States. We like the American coin. Some people, they don't care. They say, you know what? Gold is gold. I can buy Australian. I can buy Singapore. It doesn't really matter, right? As long as I'm getting the best value for my dollar. So number one was type of the metal. Number two was the size of the metal. Number three is the purity. Number four is really the most important thing in what you're doing. And what we're doing is liquidity. Is how are you going to sell your gold? A lot of people buy and they don't ask that question. It's very, very important when you're buying your precious metals to know that you need to have an exit strategy, like when you're buying your stocks. You click a buy and you sell. So when you're buying from companies like my company, for example, we do provide liquidity, liquidation. So when the time comes and you want to sell, you pick up the phone, talk to, if it is an IRA with Advana, you talk to Alex. Hey, Alex, I want to liquidate. Alex will communicate with me, and then we'd go through the process of liquidation. And we sell the metals into the market, and well, whatever we get for it, we send it to Advana, and Advana will send it back. Or if it is a regular transaction, will be, you know, they sent us the wire, they got delivery of the metals, and 10 years later, they want to liquidate, they call us back, hey, Sammy, I want to liquidate, and we give them shipping instructions. They send it to us, and then we wire them the money upon receipt and verification of that.
Great. So definitely some things to unpack there. So, you know, with the coinage that's out there, I think a lot of people, and we allude to it, and I want to dig into a little bit deeper, are just under the impression when they see, coins that most all of them are 1 ounce. You know, it's for whatever reason, whenever I talk to people, they assume that this stuff is basically all just 1 ounce. There really is no other type of unitization of it. And I think also, part of the driving reason for one is the availability of government issued coins, but two, you also have, some security in the fact that, it's being issued by a government. So, if they stamp a purity standard on there, it's going to be that. You're not going down to your local salvage yard. They're like, hey, we just scrapped a bunch of electronics. Here's a piece of gold. Trust us. there's not a block of tungsten in the middle of it or something. So, again, I think that might play a little bit into at least people's, willingness to buy a certain unit versus another. But before we kind of get into some of the other products out there, what exactly are out there as far as options for people when it comes to coinage? If these things aren't all just 1 ounce, if you buy something that is, do they go down in purity and stay the same size? Do they like physically get smaller and have the same purity standard? Does that differ between governments that issue them, whether it's US, Canada, China, Australia, Perth, whomever? Let's get a little bit into the kind of like what type of coinage is out there that people might want to buy. And again, keeping it high level, gold is gold, silver is silver, but to that point, to steal that one from you. So maybe elaborate a little bit on that as far as the products for coins.
Absolutely. So I want to reflect on your point about the source, which is an important matter. And I didn't mention it earlier with the what, because basically everything companies usually sell, like ours, they come from two different sources. They're government minted coins, which have the stamp and the seal of the government, either the RCM, Royal Canadian Mint, that's a government minted, Britannia from England, government minted, US Mint, obviously, Perth Mint, the Rand Mint of South Africa, and many other countries, right? All these are government minted. Alternatively, there's what's called private mints, but the way we sell those, usually these mints are LBMA certified, and they usually are 99.99% pure and certified. Like one of them is one of the most famous one, Argor. Argor is... they date to the 1600s there in Switzerland and Germany, one of the largest mints. It's a private mint. There's a few other mints out there. There's also some United States mint that issue rounds and bars as well. But what my agreement is that, yes, most people actually like to buy a government-minted asset because it has the seal of the purity and it also the government seal on that particular coin. Now, as far as the follow-up comment about what's out there, each provider, let's start with the United States, for example. There are private mints and the one government mint, the United States mint. They have a list of products. They go from collectible, like proof collectible, very shiny, five nines and all that, and they're higher priced. But those are for the people, you know, I want to give this for Valentine's or as gifts for graduation. They're not necessarily for diversification or hedge. Excuse me. And then there's the other assets. And as far as sizes, they vary from the kilograms of 400-ounce bars all the way down to the 10th of an ounce coin or even the 20th of an ounce coins. There's also, as far as purity, a purity is consistent with a series. Let's say the American Eagle, government minted, is 91.67% pure, regardless of the size. If it's 10th of an ounce, if it is half ounce, quarter ounce, 1 ounce, it's always going to be 91.67%, right? There's some other Eagle rounds or St. Gaudens rounds issued by private mints that are 99.9%, but these are not government minted. Okay. Now let's go to, for example, the foreign countries or overseas or across the border. There's older coins that are, I don't think they're not IRA qualified, eligible. Which are, for example, the francs and the Swiss. Those are available European coins, older coins, pre-1933. A lot of people like them because they have somewhat of a historic value to them, but they actually are also bullion at the same time, which they move up and down with the market price. So those are the francs, the Swiss francs, the sovereign, British sovereigns, and the Danish corona and the likes. And then there's the Australian Philharmonic. The Australian Philharmonic is a 99.99% pure. So, and then there's the governments around the world with their Britannia and all these other places. They also have their series from the collectible assets to the bullion assets. Basically, to it's a very important word here to understand bullion. A lot of people think bullion is a bar. Bullion is not a bar. Bullion can be a bar and can be a coin. Most coins are bullion, and almost all bars are bullion. The difference, bullion is the word bullion is an indicator of what it is. It moves up and down with the market price. So if gold goes up by 1%, that asset will go up by 1% per se. The other class is called numismatic, which is collectible. And that is for proof coins or rare coins or very old historic coins, you know, shipwreck coins that are collectible. Those are called numismatic. And usually in my company, at least, we don't focus much on numismatic. We do have them. But usually a collector will know what they want. I want a Picasso. I want a particular a particular asset, they will tell us, do you have this? And we will either have it or we'll go and find it for them in the collectible market. But most people usually buy what's called bullion bars or coins, fractional assets that move up and down with the market price.
Sure. No, that definitely makes sense as far as kind of what's out there. And I think you did hit on a key one, is that not all government-issued things can be qualified for all certain types of investments, not to, you know, focus too far on what we do at Advanta IRA, but there are certain purity standards for what you need. The big one that I always like to pick on is the South African Kuga Rand. While it was issued by a government agency, it doesn't quite meet the fineness requirement. And basically what that means is just that the purity of the actual coin just doesn't quite meet what the government set out. Granted, inherently I'm not saying anything bad per se about that. I believe it is assayed to 24 karat gold, but that just doesn't quite meet the kind of stringent little like 0.9999 whatever the IRS standard is pegged at. So, talking to someone like yourself or, checking with your IRA custodian if you're interested in purchasing precious metals with an IRA, if you want to buy it personally, that's, your business. Just understand that there are slight differences out there, and the difference between numismatic and bullion, like basing for the pricing, is two completely different things. And just important on a high level to understand what those things might be, because, if you look at a coin and your dealer's website and it says, well, this one's $2,000 and, we're $2,100 the buy now price, and, with the markups and everything, and one is $10,000. Well, why is that? If they both have an ounce of gold, why is one more valuable or less valuable than the other one? So, that's kind of, where I'd like to kind of leave that one off. Anything that you'd like to kind of indicate with regard to bars, because that's not necessarily something that's going to be issued by a governmental agency. That's more going to be the private market. So anything that you'd like to kind of elaborate on kind of the other main product, which would be bars of precious metals?
Yes. So with regards to bars, and we have a lot of bars, a lot of people like the small bars as well. We do have the gram bars. We do have the 10th ounce bars like any other company. But when I look at this, at my site and look at different bars, most of bars, like you said, they're issued by private mints. Sure, there are some RCM and Perth Mint bars, Royal Canadian Mint and Perth Mint, but mostly are either PAMP. You've seen those on the Costco when the people are buying limited 2 ounces. We don't have limitations, obviously, but there's Argor bars, there are PAM bars, there's Asahi from Japan. There are different types of bars and different types of sizes. They go all the way down to about 1 gram and all the way up to a kilo. Now, there are, in some instances, bars that are 400 ounce bar. They discontinued making the 900 ounce bar many, many years back. Most people really are buying liquidity in there. The reason why people buy bars also because of price. Bars cost less to make, So the markup on bars is usually a tad smaller than the markup on if you buy a 1 ounce bar versus a 1 ounce coin. Usually the 1 ounce bar is a little cheaper. But again, when you get a coin, you're getting the government mint seal with it, which explains why it's a little more expensive and it costs more to produce.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good way to kind of end that point up. And what I'd like to bookend this conversation with is the how. It's all well and good that people understand, the fact that this stuff does have value, of why it has value, of maybe why it could potentially be a good investment for them in their particular financial plan, and also kind of what products are out there. But that's all well and good. But, if you don't understand, how to acquire this stuff, that only paints, two-thirds of the whole picture. So maybe let's kind of end this off with, how does someone actually go about buying this? You see places, we buy gold, or you see gold at a pawn shop or something. When you get into a little bit more, formalized markets, what does it look like? If someone engages with, a broker dealer like you, or just in general at a high level, how does someone actually go about and buy precious metals?
So there are three ways of buying precious metals. There's a lot of people, have retirement accounts, qualified retirement accounts with old 401ks with prior employers, IRAs, Roth, 403Bs, TSPs, all these vehicles, right? and they left their employer and they have it sitting there in paper and they say, okay, you know what? I want to diversify. Then they would go to a dealer like myself and to a custodian like yourself. What happens, let's say they have, let's call the IRA a bucket, okay? They have their money in that bucket, but not every custodian allows them to put gold in that bucket. They have cash. They can put stock, but not every. Now, custodians like Advana will allow them to do so. So the dealer like myself, what we do is that we tell them, okay, you choose whoever custodian you want to work with. Obviously, we do work with Advanta and others. And what we tell them, you choose the custodian. There are the links on the site, our site, or you just go directly to Advanta's site and fill out the forms. What happens, you're changing the bucket from the, let's say, one of the other custodians, the paper custodians, to Advanta custodian. And then once the account is open and the money moves from this bucket to this other bucket, we're not liquidating the IRA, obviously, and having to pay penalties or any of that. Now you have a bucket that allows you to own gold. Then what happens is that the client will call me or one of our team members, or we'll reach out to them once, let's say, you, Alex, tell me, okay, this account has funded for $200,000. The client is ready to do the transaction. Then we contact the client. We go through the what and the why, and the client will choose whatever they want. Then we do an order confirmation. We send that to you for the order. Then you send us the value of that order confirmation, you wire that funds to us. Then we ship the metals to your depository. Say the Delaware depository or any other depositories that the custodian uses, and then the client owns the physical metals. Now, again, liquidity is important. Why is it important? Because when the time comes and you are looking to sell, you do the same. You do the reverse transaction. Advanta will send us the metals, and then we'll send the money, the value of the money back to the account, and the client can also take in-kind distribution. The second way is direct transaction. Hey, Sam, I want to buy gold, right? They can either go online, which, you know, greatamericanbullion.com, they can go online and choose whatever product they want to choose, or that's if they want to do business with us, and I hope they do, of course. They can choose the product they want, and they can process the transaction online, or they can just call us and say, hey, I have this amount I'd like to convert into precious metals. We'll go through the why and the what, and then we process the transaction. They pay for it either via wire, via credit card, via Zelle, if the limit permits, or via ACH or check. And then once we receive the funds, clears, we ship them the metals. And the last way is we created something called the Gold Savings Plan, which is an accumulation plan, basically. Hey, man, I'd like to buy $200 a month. Then to create an account, they choose an asset, and the company will auto-charge for that, and each month will put aside that bar, per se, or coin, and then they can take delivery once a year for it. That's really the how in general, and I hope I covered all the bases.
No, I think we did, and you know, we're certainly very grateful for someone as knowledgeable as you coming on to help us out and bring this great information to everyone. So, if people are interested in getting in touch with you, what's a good way to find you in Great American Bullion?
www.greatamericanbullion.com. You can also call us at 424-279-4608, or just email info@greatamericanbullion.com. We'll be anyway, we're very reachable and easy to reach.
Fantastic. Well, Sammy, I do certainly appreciate you being on with us today, because the most valuable asset that we all have is our time, and we can't make any more of it. So thank you very much for being on with us today. This has been the Alternative Investing Advantage Podcast. My name is Alex Perney, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage Podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at advantaira.com and subscribe.